Welcome to the Narracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host.
Great to be here. We have a packed show today, looking at some major shifts in hardware, energy, and AI.
Exactly. We're starting off with Google's massive pivot in the laptop space. They are moving away from the lightweight Chromebook model and introducing something called the Google Book, which is built entirely around their Gemini AI.
It's a huge swing at the premium market. And speaking of swings, we're also going to look at Quantum Computing Inc. They just posted a massive revenue jump. But when you look under the hood at their operating losses and acquisitions, the picture gets a lot more complicated.
And finally, we'll head to the Mojave Desert, where a new 500 megawatt hour battery deployment is completely ditching lithium ion in favor of sodium ion technology.
Let's get right into it.
So on May 12th, 2026, Google officially announced the Google Book. This isn't just a rebrand of the Chromebook. This is a brand new premium laptop category that fuses Android and Chrome OS into what they are calling an intelligent system.
Right. They are working with major hardware partners right out of the gate. Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, and Lenovo are all on board, with the first devices expected to launch this fall. And the big selling point here is deep OS-level integration with Gemini.
Google Book features something called the Magic Pointer. It's a cursor that uses Gemini to provide contextual suggestions based on whatever is currently on your screen.
And it has a signature glow bar on the laptop lid, which feels a bit like a status symbol. But the big question is whether Magic Pointer is actually a productivity breakthrough or just an intrusive novelty that's going to annoy power users.
It's a fair question. Under the hood, the platform supports both x86 and ARM processors. Plus, because it's heavily fused with Android, you get deep integration. You can run phone apps natively and access your phone files directly from the OS.
Which is something Apple has done incredibly well with macOS and iOS. Google is finally trying to solve that fragmentation between mobile and desktop workflows. But I wonder how they will manage the transition for existing Chromebook users. Is there a risk of confusing the market by maintaining two completely separate laptop categories?
It's a valid concern. Chromebooks have always been lightweight, browser-first machines for education and casual use. Positioning this as a high-end intelligence system puts it in direct competition with premium Windows and Mac devices. They are clearly playing for keeps here, but it's going to require a massive shift in consumer perception.
Moving on to the financial side of deep tech, let's talk about Quantum Computing Inc., ticker symbol QUBT. Their Q1 2026 earnings just dropped, and the top-line numbers look incredible at first glance. They reported $3.7 million in revenue, which is a massive jump when you consider they only did $39,000 in Q1 of 2025. But here is the catch. That revenue growth isn't really organic. It was primarily driven by their recent acquisitions of Luminar Semiconductor and NewCrypt.
Exactly. And when you look at the bottom line, they posted an operating loss of $20.6 million and a net loss of $4.1 million.
This triggered some intense stock volatility. The stock shot up nearly 28% on May 12th, right after earnings, but then dropped 7.2% the very next day. It really highlights the tension between speculative trading around the quantum and AI narrative and actual commercial traction.
Quantum Computing Inc. is trying to position itself as a vertically integrated provider of photonics-based hardware and room-temperature quantum systems. They don't want to just be a pure research firm anymore.
But critics are asking if this shift to becoming a hardware supplier is actually a sustainable path to profitability. They are burning through their $1.4 billion cash reserves pretty quickly to make these acquisitions.
It's the classic early-stage deep tech dilemma. You have to spend heavily to build the infrastructure and vertically integrate, but the market gets jittery when the revenue is mostly coming from bought companies rather than organic sales of your core quantum tech.
Let's shift gears to energy storage. On May 12th, Alsem Energy and Juniper Energy announced a strategic partnership to deploy 500 megawatt hours of sodium-ion battery storage, and it is primarily targeted at California.
This is a huge deal because it's utilizing Alsem's NA series technology. They claim these batteries are non-flammable, non-toxic, and crucially, they can operate without active cooling.
And that lack of active cooling is exactly why they are targeting high-temperature regions like the Mojave Desert. Traditional lithium-ion batteries require incredibly complex and expensive HVAC and cooling systems to survive in that kind of extreme heat without catching fire.
Right, and if you eliminate the need for active cooling, you drastically reduce the levelized cost of storage, or LCOS, not to mention the maintenance complexity. Plus, by using domestically produced batteries, developers can tap into federal clean energy tax incentives to improve project economics even further.
But we have to look at the track record of sodium ion. How does the performance and reliability actually compare to lithium ion in real-world, long-term grid applications?
That is the million-dollar question. We've seen other high-profile sodium-ion manufacturers struggle or fail recently. Alsem and Juniper are betting that their specific chemistry can overcome those hurdles and prove that sodium-ion is a viable, safer alternative for utility-scale storage.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up.
Sounds good. What's first?
A says, Lexicon Inc. just installed the first AGT Robotics Block 500 welding line in the U.S. at their Prospect Steel division in Arkansas. This system handles massive truss assemblies weighing up to 25,000 pounds.
It uses a plunging Z-axis, a 3D vision system, and Cortex Prime software for automated, no-programming weld sequences. It's a huge step for automating complex, low-volume structural steel and combating domestic labor shortages.
The Procure Space ETF, ticker UFO, is seeing explosive growth. It went from $50 million to over $800 million in assets over the past year, returning nearly 150%.
They're rebranding to the Strive Space Index and adding a fast-track rule to include major IPOs, like a potential SpaceX IPO, the day after pricing. Investors are definitely hunting for the physical infrastructure of AI and space.
Over on GitHub, developers are requesting a new feature for Anthropic's Claude code tool. They want an auto-accept option for plan mode.
Right now, Claude can take 10 to 15 minutes to generate a plan, and the user has to sit there just to click accept before execution starts. Devs want to authorize it in advance so they can just walk away and let the AI work.
A post on Hacker News, titled How I Moved My Digital Stack to Europe by the creator of Monokai, is sparking a lot of discussion about digital sovereignty.
He argues that relying on U.S.-based tools exposes you to too much jurisdictional unpredictability. We're seeing a real trend of developers moving their infrastructure to the EU to ensure they know exactly where their data lives.
And one more Cloud Code issue. Users are frustrated that the desktop app sessions are local only and don't sync to the cloud. Anthropic built it as a local-first tool to keep proprietary code off their servers, but it means if you switch from a work laptop to a home desktop, your AI chat history and context don't follow you. It's a tough balance between privacy and convenience. That's going to do it for this episode of the Noracast Tech Briefing.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow with more updates from the edge of tech.
Stay curious, everyone.